Rediscovering Self, A Healing Manifesto by Jean Montrastelli. Copyright Jean Montrastelli, 2010. Disclaimer, Jean Montrastelli is not a medical doctor and is not qualified to make any type of diagnosis. The contents of this audio are offered for information purposes only. Before you make any changes to your lifestyle in terms of diet, exercise, adding tapping protocols, or anything else, please consult your primary care physician. Section 1. Introduction. What do you mean, manifesto? Once in a while, it really hits people that they don't have to experience the world in the way they have been told to. Alan Knightley. Who am I? Millions of years ago, dinosaurs roamed the Earth. Sometime after that, I was born. Currently, I have two jobs that take up most of my time. Since 1996, I have crisscrossed North America with a childhood friend as part of Apex Ministries. ApexMinistries.com. I'm a storyteller who happens to be able to juggle five balls, eat fire, ride a unicycle, do a handful of really good card tricks, and get out of a straitjacket, but not all at once. Since 2006, I have been the editor of TappingQ&A.com. In addition to creating and managing the audio, video, and written resources found on that site, I run a private practice. I work with clients from all over the world. I specialize in weight release, smoking cessation, pain management, and ending procrastination. There's also a very special place in my practice for families living with the symptoms of ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder. Since 2008, I have been teaching advanced tapping techniques such as adding skills from hypnosis, neurolinguistic programming, guided imagery, and parts work to tapping. I also train practitioners to grow and build their own practice. This work is the culmination of my training and experience with my clients. What is a manifesto? A manifesto is nothing more than a statement of beliefs. This is my understanding of why we need healing and how healing can happen. The fundamentals that are listed in this manifesto are ideas and dispositions that I bring to my own personal healing work, as well as the work I do with my client. In these pages, I will not explain to you what I do. Instead, I'm going to explain to you how I think when approaching a moment of healing and transformation. My goal in sharing this manifesto is to be able to articulate each of my foundations and beliefs in a clear way so that you can take or leave whatever parts are helpful to you. In my mind, the healing process is very simple. This does not mean it's always easy. There are many unique obstacles to our healing path, but I believe the process itself is very straightforward. The steps are the same, the reasons we resist healing are the same, and the outcome is the same. When do we get to the tapping part? This is not about tapping or EFT. Tapping is a great tool. I use it daily on myself and with my clients. If you're looking for instructions on tapping, I would encourage you to check out the end of this audio, Tapping and Other Healing Resources. Remember, tapping is a tool the same way a knife, a hammer, and a computer are just tools. Place a knife in the hand of a master craftsman and you will end up with amazing woodwork. Place a knife in the hand of a master chef and you will end up with a wonderful meal. Place a knife in my hand and you will get something cut, or you might get something buttered. Success has to do with how tools are used more than the tools themselves. I don't think tapping or any other protocol is enough. Tapping is one of the tools I use that can be useful in the healing process, but I feel it is important to know why we act the way we act and what the healing process looks like. When we have a firm grasp on these concepts, it becomes much easier for us to move down the healing path because we have a sense of where we're going and what obstacles to healing we're going to face along the way. What is this tapping thing you're talking about? Most of the clients I work with, as well as the work I do in my own transformation, is based on acupressure. Acupressure is very much like acupuncture, but without the needles. The protocol I am trained in uses some of these exact same points on the body that acupuncturists would use, but in my case, we simply tap repeatedly on these spots in place of poking them with needles. That is why it is commonly referred to tapping. You will also hear tapping referred to as emotional freedom techniques, EFT. EFT was the first version of tapping that I was introduced to and is the most commonly known version of tapping. I'm going to refer to tapping from time to time because that's what I use most. You don't need to understand what tapping is or even believe that tapping works for you to get anything out of this book. This is about the transformation process, and there are many different tools that we can use for transformation and change. If you don't know what tapping is, all you need to know is that when I'm talking about tapping, I'm talking about a process that creates change. If you don't know anything about tapping, I would even encourage you to wait on learning tapping until after you finish this audio, because I believe the lessons here will make your learning of tapping easier. Who is this audio for? Most people find their way to this because they're looking for a tool and a resource to transform their lives. I have a feeling you're no different. It took an act of will and some effort for you to find your way to this audio, even if it was only a few clicks of a mouse. I am willing to bet you are here because you are seeking to quiet the critical voice that is constantly chattering away in your mind. Stop procrastinating. Reduce and or eliminate physical pain. To help accelerate your clients or your own healing journey. To lose weight. To cultivate lasting relationships. To eliminate the fears and panic that are crippling your day in big and small ways. To recognize your own awesomeness. But just wanting your life to be better is not enough. This is only for you if, one, you are serious about understanding who you are. Transformation is not like an oil change. We're not simply taking out one thing and putting in something else. This does not mean we're always going to know what's going on and why we are the way that we are. There aren't always known causes for our issues, but you must be serious about knowing yourself if you're going to transform yourself. This can be a scary thought. But the more we know ourselves, the easier it is to love ourselves and to allow ourselves to return to the natural state of health and well-being. Two, you're willing to take responsibility for your own life. I'm not saying that you've created every circumstance in your life, but you need to be willing to take responsibility. We're going to be talking about this in much more detail later, but this is no small point. This healing work is your work. It's not your mother's work. It's not your partner's work. And it's not my work. This is your work. If you're not willing to take responsibility for it, it's not going to happen. Note, this does not mean that we're traveling the path of transformation and healing alone. It is important that we fill our lives with guides, teachers, friends, encouragers, and people willing to challenge us. Regardless of the team of people we surround ourselves with, for healing, it is first and foremost our work. Three. You are willing to do the work that is needed to make lasting change. Most literature and online resources about tapping, and many other protocols, systems, and products, talk about one-minute miracles. A one-minute miracle is a situation in which a major issue is healed or released in just 1 minute. I believe this type of talk has done us all a great disservice. Yes, instantaneous healing and transformation does happen, but most transformation is a process. Even if you do experience profound healing quickly, it often takes time to integrate this transformation into every part of your life. I've worked with many clients who have had one major event in their past that now controls their waking life. It is possible for us to heal around this one profound moment, but if we've been living with the consequences of this past experience for a long time, it has more than likely knit itself into many parts of our lives. Just because we have healed that one moment that started years of unfavorable outcome, it does not mean that we are done with the healing work we need to do. In reality, lasting healing is a process by necessity. Think about it. What would happen if you lost 45 pounds in 1 minute? Sure, it might seem like a good idea conceptually, but it would be very dangerous for the body. Lasting, long-term healing can take some work and some time. What will you get from me? Honesty. One of the ways I make my living is by selling resources and working with clients. I'm hoping that after listening to this manifesto, you'll be willing to become a regular reader of my site, which has hundreds of free resources, or a listener of my podcast. You might even hire me for a one-on-one session or buy some of my products someday. Even with that being said, it is important to note that this is a standalone resource. There's nothing I'm holding back. This is not 75% of my beliefs on healing with the hope that you'll come seek out the other 25 on my website or in some other resource. This is all of them. I believe that if you listen to this audio and nothing else of mine ever again, you will have a leg up on the healing process. And that alone is enough to make me happy. What you won't get from me. The right answer. I'm not going to tell you what to do or what to believe. The information in this audio is my point of view, nothing more and nothing less. I make no claims to this being the best information or that this is the most important information. I hope my passion for understanding the healing process in this way comes through in the context of this. But please don't mistake my passion for a belief that you need to follow a similar path or approach as mine. But you need to decide what's right for you. What do I ask from you? I ask that you come to this manifesto with an open mind. As I look over this list of beliefs, I wonder how I would have received them if someone had handed them to me 10 years ago. I'm not really sure. I have a feeling that some of this is going to immediately ring true, while other parts are going to challenge your worldview. I'm not trying to convince you of anything, just get you to think in a new way for a few moments. Enjoy the journey of this audio. Who knows what you might discover. Section 2. How Tapping Found Me. Healing is a matter of time, but sometimes also a matter of opportunity. Hippocrates. I know this book isn't about tapping, but I believe my path to this work is helpful in understanding how it shaped my understanding of healing. It is also a story that many of my clients and readers have asked to hear. If you're not interested in hearing about my journey, then you can just skip to the next section. The worst description of EFT tapping ever. I travel a lot for work. Because of the amount of time I spend in airports and on airplanes, I load my MP3 player up with audiobooks, podcasts, and teleclass. You never know when you're going to be stuck somewhere looking for some intellectual stimulation. There are really only so many Sudoku puzzles that one person can do. One day, I ended up with a 3-hour layover in Pittsburgh. I decided to spend my time walking laps around the airport. I'd spent most of the day sitting, so I thought a little exercise would do me some good. During my walk, I was listening to some author who was about to release a new book. As part of the marketing, he was doing a 4 teleclass to create some buzz. During the second telecast, he brought someone on to talk about EFT. Before listening to this explanation, I knew nothing about EFT or tapping. By the time the 20-minute description was completed, I was completely confused and knew less than when I started. Even though I was utterly confused and had no idea what this EFT thing was or how it worked, my interest was piqued. When I got home, I went to the presenter's website. His website only had 6 pages in total, and one of them had the basic recipe for EFT on it. I took 5 minutes to learn it, and it slipped somewhere into the back of my subconscious mind. The stabbing headache like a stabbing knife. A few months later, I was visiting my sister in Portland, Oregon. Because of the amount of traveling I had done in the 2 months leading up to my visit to my sister's place, I showed up sick. The second night I was there, I woke up in the middle of the night with the worst headache I can remember. I've had a long life of sinus issues, but I'm not the type of person who suffers migraines. I woke up with the pain that can only be described as a knife being stuck into the top of my head. I don't travel with any sort of medication, and the bathroom in my sister's house that had her drugs of any sort was only accessible through her bedroom. I didn't want to wake her. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. Then, like a flash out of nowhere, this tapping thing came to the front of my mind. Like most people who find their way to tapping, I was desperate and willing to try anything. 60 seconds later, I was pain-free. 90 seconds later, I was asleep. Gary Craig's website and DVDs. The next morning as I awoke, and as the sleepiness slowly washed from my eyes, the events of the previous night slowly became clear. Did that just really happen? I immediately jumped on my computer to download the basic EFT manual and ordered the intro DVDs from Gary Craig's website. Note, Gary Craig is the innovator of the most commonly known tapping technique. His version is called Emotional Freedom Techniques, EFT. Online dating. Over the next few months, I consumed as much information about tapping as I could. I read websites, I watched DVDs, I listened to telecasts, I gathered anything, everything I could find related to tapping and EFT. The more I learned, the more I liked the possibilities. Every chance I had, I shared it with friends and strangers. To be honest, I was becoming the over-the-call like most people become when they first touch this type of healing. Note: if you are one of the poor, unfortunate souls who ended up sitting next to me on a flight during this time of my overexcitement, I have one thing to say. I'm really sorry. I let my excitement get the best of me. As I learned more about tapping, I decided that I really wanted to put it to the test. I had seen it work for aches and pains, I had knocked out cravings, I had helped a few people calm their nerves before speaking in public, and I wanted to see what it could really do. I'd read all the testimonials and case histories, but would it work for me? I decided to go after the issue that was plaguing me the most. If it worked on this, then I would be all in. The issue that was holding me back from the life that I wanted was my anxiety around people. Now, there are two things you need to know about my anxiety. First, most people would never believe that this was something I would deal with. At this point in my life, I'd spent the last decade making a living performing on stage. I was regularly in front of crowds of hundreds and thousands of people. On more than one occasion, the audience was bigger than 20,000. The stage was never an issue for me after the age of 15. It was, and is, as easy as breathing. My issue was social settings and phone calls. Second, the more time I spent working to understand what I was dealing with, I came to the realization that my issue wasn't that I didn't like talking to people or being around people. The problem I had was with entry. Once I was in a room or talking, I was fine. Once I picked up the phone and was talking, I was fine. The issue was I didn't know what I was getting into. Because I didn't know what I was getting into, I wasn't in control. Not that I needed to be in control. By no means am I a control freak. It simply meant I could be surprised. The reason stage was so easy is I'm in control on stage. There are a few things that can surprise me when I'm speaking or performing. This fear of unknown was crippling. I would go days without answering my phone or checking my messages. I would avoid going out with friends. I would never ask for help in a store when I couldn't find what I wanted. To put this tapping thing to the test, I decided to create the most uncomfortable social situation I could to see if I could transform this anxiety. Note, after working with hundreds of clients from all over the world, I've come to the realization that this might not have been the best approach. Just because it ended up working out for me doesn't mean that we should put ourselves in the most extreme circumstances to work our way to healing. One of the reasons I love the tapping protocols is it allows us to creep up on an issue at hand and heal in a gentle, slow way. To put this tapping thing to the test, I decided I was going to start online dating. At the time, the most extreme situation that I could think of was showing up to a drink or a meal with someone I didn't know very well, hoping they were going to like me. I live in Baltimore, walking distance from two very fun neighborhoods that have lots of great restaurants, bars, and cafes. When setting up dates, I would recommend one of these neighborhoods and let my date choose the place where we would go. The way I worked it out was I would start getting ready for the date about 45 minutes in advance. As I felt nervous and anxious while getting ready, I would just work the tapping protocol. Once I was ready, I would work the tapping protocol for the full 20 minutes as I walked to the date. Remember, all I needed was to be calm enough to begin the date. Once I was talking, I was fine. 6 weeks and a handful of dates later, the anxiety was no longer an issue. I was sold. It wasn't just the tapping. When I first experienced this transformation, I thought tapping was the reason I changed. Don't get me wrong, tapping was a very important part of my transformation. But what is just as important, if not more important, was the process that I went through with the tapping that led to my healing. At the time, I didn't realize consciously the steps I was taking. I was simply following the advice I was able to cobble together from lots of different resources. It was really a process of trial and error. The story I've just told you contains only some of the truth of what happened. I'm sure there are many steps and efforts that I took that I just don't remember. Through brute force and excess effort, I was able to make a change. It is only in hindsight and years of working at clients that I've come to realize that there was more going on than just tapping. It is my hope that you don't have to go through the same trial and error. Section 3, 12 Thoughts on Healing. Healing may not so much be about getting better as about letting go of everything that isn't you. All of the expectations, all of the beliefs, and becoming who you are. Rachel Naomi Remen. Note number 1. This is simple, but it doesn't mean that it is easy. The 12 thoughts I'm going to present to you are going to be articulated in a few short paragraphs. Most of them can be summed up in a few sentences. Just because they are simple to explain and understand does not mean they are easy to implement. is much like the statement, if you want your life to be filled with joy, be love. I agree with this statement 100%. At the very core of my being, I know that to be true, but I have found that in my own life it is very difficult to live. These thoughts are meant to challenge you and to get you thinking about the healing process. Don't mistake the ease in which I describe them with the ease in which I live them out in my own life. I struggle with and need to be re-reminded of these regularly myself. Note number 2. The system. Throughout this section, I will use the term the system when referring to the body. The reason I do this is because I'm speaking of the total self. This includes mind, body, and spirit. We are complicated beings, and it is hard to tell where one part ends and the next begins. I found it very effective when working with clients to speak of the system because it gives them permission to gather information from all types, from all parts of the system. Not just the type of information they think I'm looking for. By speaking in more general and total terms, it opens us to being surprised by how we respond. Number 1. Rediscovering Self. The name of this audio is Rediscovering Self. The reason this audio is titled after one of the 12 thoughts is because it is the most important foundation to understanding healing. We are not broken, and we don't need to be fixed. For me, the healing process is about returning to our natural state. Our natural state is a state of health and well-being. Our bodies are made to heal. Our personalities are made for self-esteem, confidence, and greatness. When we go through the healing process, we are on a journey of returning our system to its natural state. Sometimes this involves changing beliefs so we can see the world and ourselves as they truly are. Other times this means we are returning a part of our physical system back to its natural function. While other times it's going to be new understanding of who we are. For me, this is not a process of getting something new, but instead returning to our natural state of health and well-being. We are not adding something new, but instead rediscovering something that has always been there. It's like finding a priceless heirloom in the attic. Up until that moment, we uncover it, we are unaware of its existence. We did not create the heirloom. We have only recovered the gem that has always been there. When I approach healing, I do it in the same way. I'm not looking to make myself into something new, but reconnecting and uncovering the richness that I've always been, but for some reason have lost connection with. I find this disposition to be helpful because it helps me to not be in conflict with my system in its present state. For example, it's very easy to be frustrated with my body when it's not functioning well. If I think my body is failing me, then I'm going to be fighting with my body. I'm hoping, vainly, to wrestle it back into health. Rarely is my body going to respond well to my force to bring it back to health. When I see the body is not in a state of well-being and that its natural state is well-being, I can then work with my system to bring it back into health. I am no longer wasting energy on being frustrated, angry, or overwhelmed by my current state. I can be easy with myself and about how I got here. I can put all of my energy towards moving back to my natural state of health and well-being. Number 2, you might not have created it, but you are responsible for it. There is a very dangerous moment in all learning. It's the moment in which we see things much clearer than we did before and all of a sudden realize how much more dangerous the world is than we thought. The perfect example is when we see a news report on the health and safety of a local restaurant or the cleanliness of a hotel room. This new information can be overwhelming. It is now possible to see filth and disease on every surface. The world is no different, but we see it in a new way because the information is new to us. I see the same thing happening all the time with my clients when they start to understand the power of their own thoughts and words. I work very hard with my clients to make them observers of their own life. Becoming an observer of our own life is a powerful tool in the healing process because we start to see how our issues are created. This gives us an opportunity to do something about them. At the same time, this can be overwhelming. When we see how our issues are created, we can see the hand that we have had in their creation. When my clients start to understand how their choices have helped to create the reality, they quickly get overwhelmed because they are now watching every word they say and every thought they have. Now they're dealing with their own thoughts that are negative and away from health and well-being, and they're feeling bad for having these thoughts. Then they feel bad for having these thoughts that leads them either further away from health and well-being. With that being said, it's important to look at the situations and how we create them and how they affect our healing process. There isn't enough space in the short audio to have a full conversation about what we create in our experience and reality, but I think it's very important to look at what we need to respond to. For me, there's a huge difference between what we have created and what we're responsible for. For example, if a baseball comes flying through my front window, it would send shards of glass everywhere. On some level, there might be some value in trying to figure out how and why the baseball broke my window. But in the moment, it is much more important to take care of what needs to be taken care of. First, I need to clean up the broken glass so I don't hurt myself. Second, I need to do something to the newly made hole to ensure my home stays safe. I may or may not be the cause of the baseball breaking the window, but I need to take responsibility for the situation that it has created. It does me little good in the short term to spend all my effort to figure out the whys and the hows. I need to take care of the outcome. Our lives and our issues are no different. We are in the situation we are in. Our lives are in their current state, and that's a fact. It might be helpful in the long term to figure out how we got here, but what is much more important is the fact that we are taking responsibility for our lives, much like taking responsibility for the broken window and cleaning up the mess. Health and well-being do not happen by accident or by the whims of faith. If any change or healing is going to happen to our lives or our health, it's because we are taking responsibility for ourselves and making it happen. Number three, all physical and emotional sensations are nothing more than information. Our physical sensations and our emotions are nothing more than the system providing information about how we're experiencing the world. For example, when my hand hurts because I placed it on the hot stove, the system is saying, move, part of the body's melting. When my ankle aches after I've twisted, the system is saying, please, don't walk on your ankle, so it can be undisturbed and healed. When the system is angry, it's saying, we're under attack. Here is some extra energy to protect ourselves. And when we are sad, the system is saying, something that is important is now missing. This is true for positive information as well. When we feel whole and complete, the system says, you are in this moment, being your true self. When we feel excited, the system is saying, there are more moments of this type to be had. Keep growing. Understanding that the physical feelings and the emotions are just information is important in two ways when it comes to understanding the healing process. First, it gives us a new approach and an understanding of what is happening in our system. We move from seeing a sensation, physical pain or sadness, as a problem to seeing it as information about what's going on in our system or to our system. For example, it is good we are able to stop being scared. It's even better if we can understand why we see certain situations as dangerous. When we stop feeling scared, we feel better in the moment. But if we're able to change the reason that we're perceiving the situation as dangerous, then we won't be scared in the future. It is the difference between calming your nerves before you give a speech and not being scared about speaking in public ever again. When we see the sensation of fear as information, we can ask the question, why is my system giving me this information of fear? Why does it see it as dangerous in this situation? This revelation moves us from relief in the moment to healing, which is lasting. Second, when we see these sensations as information, it gives us the opportunity to see if the information is rooted in truth. Let's take being afraid of a mouse as an example. For someone who is afraid of a mouse, the fear they feel is absolutely true. The system is responding to something it sees as a true threat to safety and is responding the best way it can to keep us safe from the perceived danger. What is not true is the fact that the person is in real danger. We are bigger than mice. Mice are more scared of us than we are of them. If we're able to step back and ask the question, why does my system feel like the mouse is dangerous? It is starting to open up the healing path. Most times, though, it's not as easy as just asking that question. Much of the skill I have as a practitioner is being able to help my clients to see why the system is reacting the way it is. Because of training, experience, expertise, and distance, I'm able to guide my clients to seeing what the underlying belief is. Once we have identified the false underlying belief, then we can use tapping, or any other protocol, to create lasting healing, not just temporary relief. If we're not able to recognize why the system is perceiving a circumstance as dangerous, simply asking the question and seeking answers, we're going to be a step closer to healing. Number 4. The system doesn't have an agenda. Note, for this section I'm going to be talking about the motivations of the system. For example, I might say, the system believes doing this will make us healthier. I'm not saying that the system has a distinct personality from our conscious mind, or that it has any sort of free will. I'm simply making the discussion more understandable to have if we're talking in terms of wants and desires instead of mechanical motivation. This idea that the system doesn't have an agenda builds off the fact that physical sensations and emotions are just information. The goal of the system is health, well-being, and success. Every piece of information that the system provides in the form of thoughts, emotions, and sensation are pieces of information that the system believes is moving us to health, well-being, and success. But this is not to say that every piece of information the system is providing is moving us to health, well-being, or success. It's just rooted in that notion. There are times when the system is mistaking in how it is best to move to health, well-being, and success. For example, let's look at the critical voice that sometimes sprouts up telling us that we are going to fail at something. This is something I encounter all the time with my clients. They describe the little inner voice that's just chattering away all day. All it does is point out everything that has gone wrong, everything that is going wrong, or everything that will go wrong in the future. This small voice can be crippling and devastating. When experiencing something like this, it's hard to believe that this voice is rooted in serving us. It's important to note just because something is not serving us, in this case, actually hurting us, does not mean that it is not designed to hurt us. The system does not have an agenda. It simply wants us to be safe and healthy. In this case, it's just choosing a tactic that's not safe or healthy. Whatever part of our system is beating us down is doing so because it believes that if it keeps pointing out everything that we are doing is wrong, then we will be motivated to do what is right. If we look at this in a dispassionate clinical way, we'll see. The system wants us to be healthy and to have well-being. The system knows from experience that there are times when danger is pointed out to us, we're going to avoid the danger. Example, our parents telling us that when we are young, not to cross the street alone because it's dangerous. The system perceives danger in the form of not becoming what we want to be, and therefore is pointing out everything that is away from this definition of success. Very clearly, we can see how these steps logically flow, but at the same time, we can see very clearly that the tactic the system is using to move us to success is very flawed and much more harmful than helpful. The reason it is critical for us to understand that the system does not have an agenda is it gives us a new way of looking at what's going on. It would seem to make sense that we'd want to eradicate this critical voice because it's causing so much harm. But this is close to impossible, and if we did, we'd be removing a very powerful part of ourselves. If we can approach the critical voice as a part of us that wants the best for us, but is over-functioning or functioning poorly, then we have the opportunity to leverage and change this part into something helpful. In this example, we can change the part that is shaming us into a part that encourages us. How we change the shaming part into the encouraging part is a much larger topic. But for now, let's just assume that it's possible. If we approach this part of our system as a vengeful enemy, we're not going to be able to transform the part. If we approach this part of our system as an enemy, the part is going to entrench itself deeper, repeating the tactic with even more force. When we see the system does not have an agenda, we're not saying the system always chooses the best tactic, and we're not saying the system always understands where the true danger is. We're simply stating that the system, from the point of view with limited knowledge and limited resources, is functioning in a way it feels best that is moving us towards success. When we're able to recognize this, then we can ask the question, right now, my system is not functioning the way that is moving me towards health or success. What danger does the system perceive that isn't real? What tactic is the system using that isn't working the way it should? What would be the system's motivation to act in this way, to believe that these choices are truly serving me? If we're able to ask these questions after taking a step back, then we can transform the parts of us that are working very hard for our health and well-being into parts that are successfully working towards our health and well-being. Number 5, healing can't happen in a state of poverty. The opposite emotion to gratitude is not ungrateful, but instead, it's poverty. By poverty, I mean a feeling of lack of anything. We can have a poverty of health, opportunity, friends, and material possessions. Think of the postures of gratitude and of poverty. The posture of gratitude is wide open. When I feel grateful, I see myself on a high hilltop with my arms spread wide. It's a feeling of life. When we are grateful, we feel as if there is more than enough and we're willing to share from our abundance. The posture of poverty is the exact opposite. It is a feeling of desperation. It is a feeling of lack. It is a clinging to what small amount we have. It is not open posture, but instead huddled in the corner, hiding what small amount we have from the world. Healing cannot happen in a state of poverty. We cannot bring progress, change, or transformation in this closed posture. The posture of gratitude does not mean that we have the desired outcome. The posture of gratitude does not mean that we would choose the same path that led to this moment again. The posture of gratitude does not mean that we would not want to have better. The posture of gratitude simply means we're able to recognize that in this moment, there is something that we can be thankful for. It could be as small as, I am thankful to have an uninterrupted moment to wonder what I am thankful about. Or, I am thankful for this moment to ponder how I can heal through this burden. Yes, those are really small things. But gratitude can create a chain reaction. With each moment of gratitude, we open our posture a little more. And as we open our posture a little more, we open ourselves to the possibility of healing. As we open ourselves to the possibilities, we are being a little more grateful, and with more grateful, we are more open to the possibilities. Now, this is not some Jedi mind trick where we're making our system believe things are better than they really are. I have witnessed amazing transformation in my clients' lives. The foothold that got us started was the client's willingness to be honest, not play lip service to, the fact that this struggle is presenting itself right now is really a gift because it's creating the perfect moment for the body to heal and to change. Again, we're not asking ourselves to believe the problem is good. We're not asking ourselves to believe that this particular problem is the best way to heal the issue at hand. We're not asking ourselves to believe that we should walk this path again. We're only asking ourselves to honestly believe that this moment is providing a unique opportunity for us to heal. If we believe this, then real transformation is possible. Number 6, there is always resistance to change, because if there wasn't resistance, you would have already changed. The only times I talk to clients who don't want to change consciously are the clients who are seeking me because a loved one wants them to change. For example, when someone is seeing me to quit smoking because everybody thinks they should quit. Note, I never work with clients who aren't there for themselves. When they are going through the motions for a loved one, it is a waste of their time and mine. It's nothing personal, but change doesn't happen without the desire to change. At the other end of the spectrum, I work with clients who want change so desperately that they're willing to try anything. If I told them to stand on their left foot, cross their eyes, and hum God Save the Queen in a room full of loved ones, they would do it because they are so desperate for this to work out. Many times, knowing what or how to change is not the issue. I regularly talk to clients who know exactly what steps need to be taken, but for some reason they're unable to take these steps and to make these change. There are three basic resistances to change. They are limiting beliefs, underlying fears, and secondary gains of the current issue. Here's a quick working definition of all three. Limiting beliefs. Any belief that is against us reaching our goal or believing we can reach our goal. For example, I don't think I'm smart enough to figure out to create a website, therefore I can't have an online business. Underlying fears. Any fear that thinks it is dangerous to move towards our goal. For example, when I speak in front of a group of people at work, I'm going to do a poor job and my coworkers are going to believe that I don't know anything. Secondary gain. Any benefit that is gained from an issue. If we heal the issue, we're going to lose the benefit. For an extreme example, I've had a client say to me, "The only reason I have so many people in my life is because of the horrible attack that I lived through. They are here only to take care of me and my brokenness. If I get better, they will all leave because they won't have to take care of me anymore." There are two important things to remember when it comes to types of resistance. First, oftentimes it is very hard to see the types of resistance we are experiencing when we're struggling to heal or change. Remember, the conscious mind is ready for change. These types of resistance exist in the subconscious mind. For this reason, they may not always be easy to spot. We must examine ourselves carefully to find them. Many times it takes the honesty of an outside perspective to see these types of resistance. Second, and most important, since we know resistance to change is present, it makes sense to start all healing and transformation process by clearing resistance. If we clear a small part of the resistance, it's going to open ourselves to change. As stated before, we often know the steps that need to be taken for transformation. Once resistance to change is cleared, we will naturally start taking these steps towards change. Many times when I'm doing work to clear resistance in my own life, I find myself instantly energized. There are times when I take as little as 10 minutes to clear my resistance to change and then proceed to accomplish more in the next 2 hours than I did in the last week. 7. Small transformation can lead to big change. I believe that clients overestimate the amount of change that can happen in one session and underestimate the amount of change that can happen in 5 sessions. Like I talked about before, in most cases, radical change isn't going to happen in 1 minute or 1 session. I've seen rapid change firsthand. It happens frequently, but it's not the norm. With that being said, we do ourselves a disservice if we underestimate how far-reaching a small change can be. In an almost trivial example, one small pebble in our shoe can be devastating. I love my Crocs sandals, but will stop anywhere, minus being in the middle of a busy street, to remove a small pebble. Something as small as a pea can wreck everything else. This becomes significant in the healing process because sometimes we feel that there's so much work to be done and it feels like an impossible task. Because the task is so daunting, we don't even begin. I've seen clients do something as simple as forgive a dead relative and have it completely transform their health and well-being. I'm not saying that this type of forgiveness was an easy task, but a seemingly small step made a huge difference. Just because a problem is infecting many parts of our lives doesn't mean that we're going to need to do work in every area of our life. Many times healing an issue around one aspect cascades healing to many other parts of our life. Number 8. Fear and danger signals will win out over all other emotions and information. As we talked about previously, the system is constantly giving us information. Some of this information is profound and deep emotional information or acute physical pain. But for the most part, it's just information that lets us navigate our day. For example, as I walk through the park, the system is letting me know that those big green shaky things are trees. The pressure I feel on my skin is a light blowing breeze, and the skip in my step is the feeling of calm on a lazy afternoon. Some studies have postulated that we receive as many as 5 million pieces of information at any given moment. Not all of this information is needed at every moment. Because of this, we're able to filter out the information that isn't needed in any given moment. This is the reason why I can sit in a busy coffee shop and not be distracted by the conversations around me and only hear the person I'm talking to. All the sound waves from the conversations come in my ear, but the mind is able to filter out the sounds that are unnecessary. At the same time, we're able to quickly change our focus to what we are paying attention to. We can have a conversation with one friend, and another friend walks into the coffee shop and says our name. The part of our brain that is filtering out the extra conversations from the shop recognizes that in the background, there's a noise that's important to us. We look up and see our friend who has entered. In this example, we can see that there is a clear hierarchy of the information we're paying attention to. There is the information we're choosing to give our attention to, the conversation with the friend, the information in the background that might be important to us, someone walking in calling our name or our favorite song being played over the PA, and the information that isn't important at all, the conversation of the people we don't know. There's one other type of information that supersedes all other information. That is a danger signal. In our coffee shop example, if someone comes into the coffee shop screaming about a fire, no matter how hard we want to keep our attention on our friend's conversation, we're going to direct our attention to the person who is yelling. We always hear the danger signal over everything else. This is good news. If I walk across the street and I look up and I see a car, it's a good thing I hear the danger signal over all other information. The last thing I want to do is look up and think, ooh, it's a red Mustang. I love late 60s Mustangs. By always hearing the danger signal, get out of the street or you're going to be hit, first, we're keeping ourselves safe. The reason that this is important to understand in the healing process is there are times when we're receiving danger signals that are inaccurate. If I see a mouse running through the kitchen, I'm going to think, little, gray, likes cheese, I'm going to die. The last statement isn't true, but since the system believes it's a real threat, it's a piece of information that I'm going to pay the most attention to. This is the reason why I consciously know the mouse can't hurt me, but the moment I see one, I am jumping on the table and screaming like a 5-year-old girl. Many times, for true lasting transformation to happen, it's going to require that we're able to recognize the things in the world that we perceive are dangerous. Danger doesn't mean physically dangerous. I could be afraid that if I speak, a group of others are going to think I'm foolish and that I don't know anything. When we're able to recognize the things and situation that we misperceive as dangerous, it's going to give us a window into the part of ourselves that needs healing for lasting transformation. Number 9. Others don't really want you to change and will be angry when you do. The people in our lives say they want us to make changes for the better. The people in our lives are going to encourage us to take steps to transformation. There will even be times when people in our lives will provide us with resources and tools to make this transformation happen. In reality, the people in our lives, especially our loved ones, want us to change as long as it meets one condition. It doesn't require them to change as well. Now, this is not as harsh as it sounds, but it's true for the most part. Every relationship we have, from the kid we see a few times a week working at the coffee shop to the member of our immediate family, are co-creations. In every relationship, we take the roles and continue to live up to certain expectations. This does not mean that we're pretending to be someone else, but there is a level of consistency to each relationship. My brother knows how my father, my sister, and I are going to react to him changing jobs. He's going to look to my father for financial advice, my sister for job hunting advice, and for me to understand how his new job can serve as higher good. It's important to note every single relationship is a co-creation, and when we change, the nature of the relationship changes. Let's say every night I check on the elderly neighbor to make sure that she's everything she needs. I regularly help her lift heavy things, I get stuff out of the attic, and I call the building super when her sink is backed up. When I'm over in the evening, I share with her how much I would like to change the job to something I love. She is encouraging and wants me to go for it. I finally decide to take the plunge. To get a new job, it requires me to gain training, and to that end, I start taking night classes. Because of these classes, I'm not able to help my neighbor 3 nights a week. Because of my change, she also has to change. I'm not saying she's going to consciously connect the dots and think, but Jean, because Jean's going to school, my life is harder. But on a subconscious level, she's going to notice her life has changed and she might resent me. These sorts of problems surface in lots of ways. I can heal a part of my life and now stand up for myself. The people who used to run me over emotionally are going to be frustrated when I'm not meeting their needs. I might release weight and get in shape only to see my close friends think, I bet Gene thinks he's better than us because he lost 40 pounds and he knows we can't. Each change we make is not going to be met with resistance from every person in our lives. There are many times in my own life where I have healed and transformed, where I've received amazing support and love from my loved ones, even when it required us to renegotiate our relationships. I'm not telling you this as a reason not to transform your life, but it's important to note this point for two reasons. First, knowing that change to ourselves is going to change our relationships might create a resistance to change. I had a weight release client say to me, I've heard how my fat friends talk about skinny people. If I release a bunch of weight, they're going to say the same things about me. Because the feared change in relationship, she found it very hard to make the steps she needed to change and heal herself. Second, it is good to simply be aware of how people are going to react to our transformation. They're not reacting negatively because they don't like us. They're not reacting negatively because they don't like our change. They're reacting negatively because of the change in their own life. It's important to note that I'm not saying that your change creates negative change in someone else's life. It just creates change, and people are scared of change. Number 10, you don't have to know why you are the way you are to heal. Even without a scientific background, we understand the principle of cause and effect. We understand this from our very first days. When we get older, we use the cause and effect to get what we want. Watch a 4-year-old throw a temper tantrum. The moment she gets what she wants, she stops crying. We do cause and effect analysis all the time with every choice we make. This is true for the choices as small as what we're going to eat for lunch and as large as who we're going to marry. Before making any choice, we are examining past events to look for cause and effect relationships. We look at these past events to see what we can apply to current choices. The disposition to always look for cause and effect, even subconsciously, can hinder or stop the healing and transformation process in two key ways. First, because we're so keen on knowing the cause and effect relationship, we will come up with incorrect cause and effect relationships to put our mind at ease. I see this all the time with my clients. They come to me with a certain issue and they believe they know why they are the way they are. For example, a client might come to me to work on a fear of public speaking and they say, the reason I have this problem is because when I was in the first grade, everyone laughed at me when I was doing show and tell. It is very possible that this is the root cause of the fear of public speaking, but it's also just as likely that it could be a completely different reason. If we misunderstood the reason for an issue, we could be spinning our wheels and not getting anything done. If fear of public speaking has nothing to do with the show and tell memory, then no matter how much time we spend working on the show and tell event, public speaking fear is not going to change. The beautiful thing about the tapping protocols is we're able to provide healing and transformation without having to know exactly the experience that's created the wound. If we get attached to a specific cause, we could end up wasting time. Second, we can feel we need to know why we are the way we are to make sure it doesn't happen again. This is a very common reason for us to not heal. We recognize how difficult our life is because of an issue. We don't want to heal the issue to only have to come back to it again. Therefore, we are convinced if we know why we are the way we are, then we can prevent this from happening again in the future. This line of thinking makes sense. The problem is sometimes there just isn't a specific reason why we are the way that we are. Many times there's a very clear reason for our issue, but there are many other issues that just creep into us slowly. For example, the insecurity around the way we look is not because of a particular moment, but instead, idea of what a perfect body is that has crept into our subconscious mind from looking at mass media and modern culture for years. if the need to know why we are the way we are exists, and there's no specific moment or experience that has created the why we are, then we're going to be stuck. It's okay to want to understand why we are the way we are. There are even times when knowing this information can heal the healing process. It's important that we understand that it's not a requirement for healing to know why we are the way we are. Number 11. Transformation is about moving to the now. Yes, I know, that sounds a little lightweight and a little new agey, but hear me out. Almost every emotional issue that I help clients transform falls into one or two categories. The issue is either about healing a wound from the past or dealing with a fear about the future. Both of these types of issue prevent us from being fully present to the moment we're in. Let's take a look to see how this happens. The past. When we are being affected by a past wound, we are emotionally stuck in a past moment. It's almost as if we're reliving that moment emotionally and experiencing the emotion in the past moment as if it's happening right now. To illustrate this, I want you to think of a choice you've made recently that you now regret. No, really, go ahead. Think about it. I'll wait. More than likely, as you brought this moment or memory, you experienced an uncomfortable wave of emotion. The magnitude of these emotions is based on how much the choice impacted your life and how closely the events in that moment are to this time. If the poor choice was very recently or about something very important, I have a feeling you're having a hard time even focusing on my voice as you get engrossed in your emotions. Regardless, if the poor choice happened recently or years ago, emotionally you are right there. The wound has pulled you away from this moment and back into the past. This is how past wounds affect our lives daily. Because the emotional engagement with the past moment, we can't be fully present to the opportunities and obstacles we're experiencing right now. When we are emotionally present in this moment, we are much more likely to make choices we would want about who we are and what we want to be. For example, all of us have experienced heartbreak. If we're still reliving the pain of the past breakup, it's going to cloud our vision about our current relationship. If I keep feeling the pain of the past breakup, I'm never going to be able to commit to the relationship today because subconsciously I'm going to assume relationship equals pain. Only when I'm able to heal the pain around the past breakup and stop reliving it emotionally am I going to be able to fully experience the new relationship in this moment. Note, there's a big difference between forgetting the past and no longer being emotionally entangled in the past. There is wisdom that can be learned from our past experiences, and it's good to remember what we've experienced to inform the choices we're making today. Healing past wounds is about moving from reliving the past emotionally to remembering the past as a fact. The goal is clearly seeing the past for what it is. The goal is not getting rid of the past altogether. The future. When we are affected by fears, a similar process happens, but instead of being stuck in the past, we're emotionally stuck in the future. I would like you to bring a new thought to mind. This time I'd like you to think about the future that you dread. It might be a request you have to make of someone else, or it might be a task you have to do. It really doesn't matter what you're thinking of, but just bring it to mind, something that causes you dread. No, really, go ahead. I'll wait. Once again, as you thought of the future moment, the emotions of nervousness, fear, and overwhelm swept through your system. More than likely, you could almost feel the situation playing out right now. And as you did, you might have even felt dread around multiple outcomes, not just one. Whenever we experience worry or fear, it pushes us emotionally into the future, even if that moment is just a few seconds away. This makes it difficult for us to do what we want and what we need to do in this present moment. Note, I'm not saying fear or worry are bad. I'm not saying the transformation process is about us losing all fear. Fear is good and it serves us. It's good that I'm afraid of tigers. It keeps me safe so I don't make the mistake of thinking the tiger is nothing more than a giant kitty. The problem comes when my fear of tigers is so great I can't leave my apartment in Baltimore, Maryland. This is what I would call a disproportionate emotional response. My fear response is working too hard. When we do transformational work, we're not eliminating fear, but instead eliminating disproportionate and irrational fears. In other words, we're eliminating the fears that we have to things that are in fact not dangerous. The reason I say transformation is about moving to the now is because when we do transformation work, healing past wounds and releasing disproportionate fears of the future, we are emotionally untangling ourselves from that past and that future, giving us more emotional resources for this moment. I need to be very clear on one point. I'm not saying when we heal wounds and release fears, we're going to have perfect moments right now. This does not mean that we're going to make perfect choices right now. It does not mean that we're going to get everything that we want in this moment or ever. There is more to getting what we want and need in this moment than just being emotionally present to this moment. As we talked about above, there are things that are out of our control. But when we're fully present to this moment, we're able to make the best choices we can make, and we're going to be more fully present to inspiration in this moment and to find our way to the people, opportunities, and choices that will help us to create a life full of wonder and joy. Therefore, transformation work is about releasing the emotional entanglement we have with the past and the future so we can move to being fully present to what is happening in our lives right here and right now. Being more present in the here and now will help us to make inspired choices to become who we want to be. Number 12, it's okay if transformation is scary. There are a lot of good reasons for us to heal and transform. I believe that there's a part of us that is always longing for better, healthier, and more successful. At the same time, just because the end result of transformation is wonderful doesn't mean the process of healing and transformation is always easy and fun. Through the course of this manifesto, I've talked about a number of reasons why we prevent ourselves from healing. In addition to what I've talked about here, there are many other reasons why transformation can be scary. That's okay. It's okay that if you don't know where to start, afraid that it's going to be too hard, and that others are going to judge you for trying. It's okay to worry about succeeding and backsliding to where you are right now. It's okay to worry about transformation and then you don't know why you're worried. If you're willing to admit that the process of transformation is a little, or a lot, overwhelming, then you're going to be on the right path. Oftentimes, when we're healing the reason why transformation is hard in this moment, we're also doing work on deeper issues that need to be healed. The resistance to wanting to try is oftentimes intertwined with the deeper issue itself. Here is an example of how this happened. A friend of mine asked me to come over to her place so we could do some work on an issue she needed cleared up. After arriving at her place, we talked for 45 minutes about everything but the issue. We talked about weather, new furniture, this week's top chef, and finally said, "Do you want to do some work on this issue or not?" Now, this question wasn't based in my frustration, and the question wasn't in blame. I was just wondering if she really wanted to do work. She explained that she was afraid that because the issue was so deep, it was going to be very emotional. To start, I had her tune into all the emotions she was feeling. This included the emotions about the issues, plus the worries about the process of going too deep and finding something emotional and painful. Without it getting too specific about what she was feeling, I asked her with her hands to show me how big all the emotions were together. She held her hands about 2 feet apart. We did some work on clearing and healing the emotions around the fear of doing this work. After clearing and releasing these emotions, I asked her how much of the total was left. She held her hands 6 inches apart. Now that the fear of the process being painful was gone, it made clear and deep issue much easier to deal with. Again, it's okay if the process of healing feels overwhelming. In the beginning, being successful is not what is most important. What's most important is your willingness to try, to fail, and to try again. You don't have to do it all right now. The goal is small victories. Small victories are more achievable in the face of fearing transformation. When we have a series of small victories, all of a sudden we have lasting transformation. You don't have to get rid of it all the first time or the 10th time. You don't have to get it all done at once. And you don't have to get it all done alone. You simply have to try something small, even if it feels scary. You can do it. You were made for health and well-being. Now is the time to start the process of rediscovering who you are. Section 4, Three Simple Requests. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my thoughts on healing and transformation. In addition to giving me some of your time and your attention to my reflections, I have three simple requests. Number 1, give me your feedback. My greatest teachers in learning about healing and transformation have been my clients. In very particular ways, we explore and examine these ideas as we do work together every day. The ideas in these books have been shaped by their input without them ever knowing it. I know this is not definitive or a complete document, and I still love learning and growing in these ideas. I would love to hear your feedback and your input. What needs to be tweaked? Where am I wrong? And where have I completely lost my mind? The most current version of this manifesto can be found at tappingqna.com/healing-manifesto. You can find the version of the audio as well as the most current version of the ebook there. On that webpage, there's a comment section where you can let me know what you think. I really want to know. This is how I'm going to learn. If you have thoughts that will improve this book, please, please, please let me know. Number 2, share this with your friends or your loved ones. The interweb is an amazing tool. You can share information and quickly with people all over the world. It costs you nothing but a few moments to pass this along to a friend, a loved one, or a colleague. I'm not asking you to spam the world, but after a few thoughtful moments, you can think of one or two people who might find this interesting or helpful. Please pass it along. Also, if you have a blog, a website, a mailing list, or a client base who you think would find this document useful, please pass it along to them. Like I said, the most current version of this document can be found at tappingqna.com/healingmanifesto. But you don't even need to put the link to that site. If you just want to put a full version on your website or just email it along, please do that. All I ask is that you complete it in its full form. Number 3. Keep healing and growing. My most basic hope for this audio is that you've been inspired to continue down your healing path. Even if you don't agree with a single word I've spoken, I hope by taking a few moments to consider the healing process, you are continuing to work your way back to balance. Section 5, Tapping and Other Healing Resources. Number 1, tappingqna.com. This is the website I edit. At the time of this publication, October of 2010, there are over 260 free resources in the form of articles, tap-along audios, tapping instructions, interviews with the brightest minds in change work, tapping instruction, and much, much more. Every week, 2 or 3 new free resources are added to the site, and starting in 2011, that will increase to 3 or 4 free resources every single week. Number 2, tappingqna.com/learntapping. Here you will find the basics instructions on how to do EFT and tapping. There are audios that you can listen to and ebooks you can download. All of this info is free. If tapping and EFT is completely new to you, within 15 minutes you'll know enough to start doing work on your own healing and transformation. Number 3, tappingqna.com/podcast. Every 10 days I publish a new podcast. These podcasts are always free and the entire podcast archive is online. In addition to giving tapping instruction, I interview the brightest minds in change work. You can listen to them right in your web browser, or you can subscribe to the podcast through the iTunes Music Store. Number 4, tappingqna.com/store. The online store contains scripts, tapping along audios, from beginner to advanced instructions, and even tools for practitioners. As of November of 2010, for the first time anywhere online, there will be audio versions of Level 1, Level 2, and Level 3 EFT training. Number 5, facebook.com/tappingqna. 3 or 4 times a week, I provide a link to a free tapping resource that I've found on the web to help you grow and develop in your own process. Finally, help me. If you know of a resource that I should include in my resource page, or someone I need to interview for a podcast, let me know. Also, if you find a topic that is not covered on the site but think it should be, let me know. I'm always looking for new topics to cover. I can be reached directly at gene@tappingqna.com.